Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of the mortgage industry. Your host, David Lickin', bringing you the latest insights, trends, and updates from the world of mortgages. Whether you're a seasoned industry veteran or just getting started, this show is your go-to source for all things mortgage. On Lickin' on Lending, we're not just about delivering information, we're about delivering it in a way that's lively, engaging, and yes, even entertaining. You'll hear from a wide range of regular contributors, experts who make the complexities of the mortgage business not just understandable, but enjoyable. Our goal? To keep you informed on the operational aspects of the industry. Everything from regulations and compliance to technology and market trends. Without ever being boring. We believe that staying up to date doesn't have to be dull, and our interactive conversational style ensures you'll be hooked from the get-go. So get ready for detailed discussions, lively debates, and a wealth of knowledge that will help you navigate the ever-changing landscape of the mortgage industry. Let's get started. This is Lickin' on Lending. Now your host, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, June 24th, 2024. Good to have you with us. I'm up in the Minneapolis area attending the Total Expert Accelerate 24 conference, but we're coming to you live again with another podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. We're so grateful to have Adam DeSanctis of the MBA with the MBA Mortgage Minute, as well as Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and a music parody, Matt Graham with a market update, as well as David Kittle with TMC, Alice Alvey of Union Home, as well as Alan Pollock, who is the guru of technology with a tech update, as well as Bill Corbett with his wonderful commentary, and Mark Helm for all of his contributions. So good to be with you. We're excited about this podcast. I want to thank our sponsors. I want to start with Byte Software. Byte provides an exceptional level of LOS customization that allows you to work the way you want to work, rather than the way a particular company forces you into their workflow. They've got such great flexibility. Whether you're a COO managing thousands of users or an entrepreneur just starting up a new mortgage operation, nothing is better and more flexible and affordable than the Byte software. But when I say affordable, that's not to imply that it is not as scalable to some of the biggest place you could possibly get. I'm thinking of CMG. I'm thinking of Atlantic Bay. Companies like that use Byte software. Also, a special thank you goes to Finastra Software, the number one fintech company in the world with market-leading point-of-sale and origination platforms. Also, Lender Homepage. They make it as easy for LOs to win by automating time-consuming tasks, allowing them to focus on growing their pipeline. Lender Homepage simplifies all of your tech under one professionally branded platform. Also, True. If you're looking for a cost savings, boy, you can't get anyone better than True. They have an 80% cost saving over the market leader, and yet they provide the same coverage as the market leader when it comes to income and employment verifications. Industry-leading coverage and conversion that supports 90% of the U.S. workforce. Amazing technology. Love these guys and what they're doing. Will be to gather here at the Total Expert Conference. Also, Angel AI. These guys are rewriting the book on how mortgage lending is done. It's being completely reimagined. And AI, the cost to originate a loan is just plummeting as a result for those that are using Angel AI. And the best part, you can try it out and use the full version for free. 100%. Go to askangel.ai. Check it out. I'm telling you, thousands are each week are joining the Angel AI ranks, and you'll be glad you gave it a try. Also, Candid, that's a CRM, or it's more than just a CRM. I mean, it falls in the CRM category, but it's so much more than that. It's the only mortgage marketing and sales ecosystem built for the modern loan originator, and it's built by one of the top originators in the nation, Garrett Locklear. And it helps you structure, manage, and grow your business to whatever level you want it to grow. It's an amazing technology. It's preferred by loan originators across the country. In fact, other companies, loan officers that have another system are going, can we please have Candid? That's how strong it is. So if you want to find one that works both at the marketing level as well as at the loan officer level, you can't go wrong with Candid. Also, Mortgage Bankers Association, be sure to sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app to help having the word heard on the Hill of what they're all that the MBA is doing to support our industry. And then the two co-ops we have, the Mortgage Collaborative and Lenders One, sign up for both of these. They are just so powerful what they can do. They are unique in how they go about it. Both are very powerful and very effective and growing. Also, I want to say the two business intelligence apps that are must-haves are Mobility, MMI, and Modex. I love these two for what they can do. Also, if you're learning to educate and train your people, check out Knowledge Coop. Ken Perry and the team do an amazing job with that. All right. This last week, we had Richard Greiser and Jody Hall of Truve on the topic of the difference between a successful rollout of new technology. It was a great discussion. Also this week, we will be releasing the episode with Dan Smith of LendingPad with the topic, the changing mortgage tech landscape. You're going to enjoy it. So let's get over to Adam DeSantis with this week's Mortgage Minute from the MBA. Adam, what do you have for us?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. FHFA late Friday announced the conditional approval of a new product proposal that would allow Freddie Mac to purchase certain closed-end second mortgages. At first glance, MBA appreciates FHFA's detailed responsiveness to the key questions we outlined in our comment letter regarding the program's scope, mission, and secondary market implications. FHFA's receptiveness to feedback through the new products and activities final rule has produced a pilot rollout that is limited in size and duration, mitigates the impact on the private label securitization market for second liens, focuses on borrowers with lower loan balances, and will encourage participation by smaller lenders that do not have easy access to liquidity for closed-end seconds. You may recall that our May 2024 comment letter did not oppose nor support this proposal, instead stressing the need for additional information to effectively evaluate the new product's impact, such as pricing details, information on expected volume or plans for volume caps, and any implications for the UMBS prepayment speeds. MBA will remain engaged with FHFA and Freddie Mac to monitor the results of the pilot and ensure that it remains available to lenders of all sizes and business models and avoids disrupting the developing private label securitization market for second liens. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Adam, for that update. Listeners, be sure to download the Mortgage Action Alliance app. That way you can support what MBA is doing on the Hill. We need to get behind. Unfortunately, the mortgage lobby is one of the smallest lobbies of the different voices that are going to the legislators. We need to be in there and supporting what the MBA is doing. Let our voices be heard. You do not have to be a member of the MBA to participate, but you should be. Enough on that. Could talk about that one. Very fond of what they're doing and the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Now it's time to get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight and his macro view of the markets. And of course, one of Les's famous music parodies. Les, what you got?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
People selling out, people buying in because of the color of their screens.
With the Fed listening to the bonds and data, look for the 30-year mortgage rates to stay below 7.75 and reach 6% by year end, while the 10-year yield falls below 3.5. Stop breakdancing. It will be without significant increases in production because affordability remains a significant obstacle. Additionally, due to delinquency costs and faster prepayment speeds, servicing values will drop significantly. These views are mine. Untangle the ball of confusion at tmspotlight.com. Great Jerome Powell. Can't you hear bonds talking to you? Data confusion. Segmentation, disinflation, pro-inflation, obligation to the datum.
Again, there's so much packed into Les Parker's little message. Go back and listen to it again. You can go on our website and listen to all of Les's commentary on our website where we download all of Les's reports. You can just binge listen to all of the contributors. But Les's is unique and just really special, especially I love what his rate forecast is for the end of the year. Rates below 6%. That's amazing. As they say, from his lips to God's ears, let's hope that happens. Anyway, check out TM Spotlight newsletter. You get the paid version for free if you put in the word power for Power Seller. It's a great daily newsletter with some of the best insights you'll find about what's driving interest rates. Time for market update with Matt Graham, the founder and CEO of MBS Live. Matt, what do you have for us today, my friend?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live market update. Last week was fairly uneventful for the bond market and punctuated by Wednesday's holiday closure. The week really didn't begin in earnest until retail sales came out on Tuesday morning. The headline was only slightly weaker than expected at 0.1 versus 0.2, but the revision to the previous month was a bit bigger, knocking the 0.0 reading down to negative 0.2. The bond market cheered the news, as it often does when the economy shows signs of weakness and retail sales has been increasingly tradable. The 10-year Treasury yield only moved down about 4 basis points in response, but then there was a mystery rally in the afternoon, not readily tiable to any overt headlines, economic reports, or other developments. When these sorts of things happen on the day before a holiday, we often think about things like positional trading considerations, i.e. traders closing out positions ahead of a holiday or a weekend. In this case, the closing of positions resulting in lower treasury yields would tend to suggest the closing of short positions and then the risk of reshorting on the following business day. Indeed, Thursday morning saw a little bit of mystery weakness. The data itself definitely didn't suggest weaker treasury trading or bond trading in general. Housing starts were quite a bit weaker than expected. Jobless claims were a little bit higher than expected and still very elevated compared to the recent range. The Philly Fed index was also a little bit weaker. Really, the only objective piece of news that would have suggested weakness in the bond market would be the prices paid component of the Philly Fed index. Bottom line, there is a case to be made for position squaring on Tuesday and repositioning into some short trades on Thursday. Finally, on Friday, we got the week's only other potentially significant data in the form of S&P Global's PMIs, not to be confused with the ISM PMI data that has long been the dominant PMI in the US. S&P used to be market with an I, and has been an up-and-coming market mover in the past few years. Most recently, it is just as relevant as ISM PMI in many cases because it provides the first look at any given month of economic data because it comes out about 2 weeks before ISM PMI. Incidentally, it comes out 2 weeks before the final S&P PMI too, because there are actually two releases each month for S&P. This was June data. It was one of the first reports for the month of June. And in this case, the services sector was much stronger than expected, strongest in more than 2 years, according to this report. And that pushed bond yields sharply higher, at least in a narrow range. In fact, it might not be appropriate to say sharply higher when treasury yields only rose from 4.22 to roughly 4.27. Those numbers should sound familiar because they were in play on Tuesday morning as well. And with that in mind and all that having been said, does any of the movement seen last week even matter in the bigger picture? The answer is not really. It all was contained in an excruciatingly narrow range in the bigger picture, with every single trading day falling well inside the ranges established on just the last 2 days of last week. So where does that leave us now? Heading into the current week, there isn't much more on the calendar with the promise of causing volatility. One might assume that Friday's PCE price index would be fairly relevant, considering that's the Fed's preferred gauge of its progress toward the 2% inflation target. But PCE historically has not been a significant market mover compared to something like CPI. We only see PCE have a big impact when it tells a different story than CPI and when the actual number falls pretty far from the forecast. In this case, the market's looking for core PCE month over month to come in at 0.1. That might seem low, but recall that CPI came in at 0.163 before it was rounded up to 0.2. So it is indeed a possibility and not some sort of diabolical setup by the financial market to create an erroneous, weaker than expected reading and push rates higher. Regardless of Friday's PCE outcome, the biggest deal for rates in the bond market is next week's slate of economic data. It's a little bit of a weird one, with Thursday being the 4th of July and then Friday morning being the jobs report. But other than that, there's the traditional lineup of early month econ data with ISM manufacturing, JOLTS, ADP, ISM non-manufacturing, and of course the jobs report on Friday. That's it for this week. Back to you.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks so much for that report. Listeners, be sure to check out mbslive.net. If you're not already signed up for this technology, you got to, especially in this market where things are so dynamic and changing. Use the LOL code to sign up. That's right. Licking on Lending, LOL. When it asks for a code, put that in and you get an extended trial period without having to put in your credit card. Although you should put in your credit card. You want this thing. This technology, I've heard from so many of our listeners saying, Lickin, I love MBS Live. Thanks for introducing me to it. Now it's time for the legislative update with Alice Alvey, Vice President and Partner Education at Union Home Mortgage. Alice, what do you have for us today?
Hello, everyone. Well, as you may have heard, the Federal Housing Finance Agency has authorized and approved Freddie Mac conducting a pilot on second mortgages, and I should say offering second mortgages. So here's what we know so far. This is based on essentially the proposal that was published that we did talk about on the show a few episodes back when it was pending, to propose what this second mortgage program would look like. So here's the reminder on what it would look like. It's a closed-end second mortgage program, primary residence. Freddie must own the first mortgage, so you're not going to be able to attach this to an FHA, a VA, or even a Fannie loan. The first mortgage has to be seasoned at least 2 years. It's not eligible for some scenarios like land trusts or co-ops. The max total loan to value would be 80% for most residences, with the exception that it'll be 65% for manufactured homes, and not to go over the max for any other transaction restrictions like cash out. It would be a 20-year term, manually underwritten to start with, so that causes some DTI challenges right then and there. And then a secondary side, it would be delivered through the cash window. Freddie would initially provide spot bids rather than forward prices to sellers. And then loans would remain in Freddie's portfolio for about 6 to 9 months until creation of a second mortgage, non-TBA guaranteed securities, and for the system implementation. Overall, the servicing's the same. There would be some specific loss mitigation solutions for the foreclosure activity that would require Freddie approval. And then if the first is paid off, the second must be paid in full unless otherwise stopped by state law. Your rep and warrant framework for the second would be the same as what we have today for our first mortgages, but it would be applied separately. So essentially you would get, it could have a challenge, whereas your first may not, or vice versa. So I got that data from the Federal Register for when it was published back, like I said, in April. We don't know about the MI companies. They're a little lukewarm on this. Obviously, at a 80% total loan to value, we wouldn't need them on the transaction. So at least for now, we don't think it matters so much where the MI companies stand. But just wanted to give you an idea of what that program is going to look like. It'll just be in pilot. They'll have 18 months to run through this, and then for those of you who aren't in the pilot, at least by listening to this, you'll know what you're up against competitively. If you go to the proposed rule, you can see where they've done a side-by-side comparison on getting a second versus getting a cash-out refinance. So that's a good formula to have in your tool belt as you're trying to sell against a second, because obviously that's going to depend greatly on where interest rates are for first and seconds at the time. So that's the scoop on the Freddie Mac second mortgages that you will be seeing coming to the occasional lender who's part of the pilot and later in 2024. The other piece of news that I have for you is please check out, today is your last day. So June 24th, this is, unfortunately, it came out after the show last week. They only are giving us a week to comment on a mortgagee letter that is in draft. It basically is editing a section of FHA's defect taxonomy. It currently states that fraud or misrepresentation falls into areas of severity, and essentially it's always been implied that we're responsible as a lender for any of our third-party brokers, but this is really putting the verbiage very clearly out in front that the TPO, if your third-party origination partner could have or should have known that there was misrepresentation in the file, that we as the entity who purchased that loan would have responsibility and repurchasing it also. So I think it's a time for all lenders to revisit their agreements with any of their third-party origination partners. Make sure that you're buttoned up on fraud, because the industry is seeing a large increase in mortgage fraud. There are lots of rings out there, and what's old is new again in terms of companies being set up to create fraudulent employment. You'll see people's names reoccurring throughout loan files who are creating fraudulent documents. So this is big, folks. Make sure you are got your people trained on how to spot mortgage fraud. And as this FHA mortgagee letter is pointing out, make sure your TPO agreements are buttoned up so that you're all protected and your systems are protected, watching out for mortgage fraud. That's my report for today. Back to you.
Thank you, Alice. Appreciate it. Mark Helm is here. He is Senior Executive Partner at Transformational Mortgage Solutions and available to give us a report on loan servicing in the agencies, Fannie, Freddie, Jenny, and the like. Mark, what do you have for us today?
Thank you, David. I wanted to share with the team today the results of a meeting I recently had between my quality control area and operations area. This is a very important meeting to me because we had had some skirmishes between the operations area and the findings of the quality control area. And I wanted to bring everybody's attention how important it is to work together as a team. It appears that over time, in prior management, exceptions were made to quality control procedures to please investors. Sometimes these can be very detrimental to you, especially if you don't have this in writing. But when your quality control area is still quality controlling loans based on the base requirements and not aware of any variances that have been approved by management or approved by the investor, it makes it kind of difficult because they're citing findings that might or might not be applicable. But the most important thing is that any findings we have that are on an investor and the investor has an approved exception to those findings, we've got to be aware that we might creating ourselves a make whole or a potential repurchase environment if we don't adhere to the proper guidelines of the investor. So this was not working out well for us. So what I did is I called a meeting together of the quality control personnel and management and also the operations manager and particularly the underwriters in loan operations. And we came together in a meeting and had a very fruitful discussion where we talked about exceptions and how they were handled, what was an exception, what not exception, and gave clarity to the exceptions that QC had been noting and furnishing to them to make sure that everybody was on the same page. What we found out, we weren't on the same page. We found out that this would be a very fruitful meeting, that we needed some policy guidelines to be upgraded, some procedural guidelines to be upgraded, and that we needed to have a more formal compliance meeting scheduled periodically, and we're going to do it monthly for a while. And that compliance meeting have a subset for quality control and have the same individuals representative from the loan operations and the origination side of the business. It's important to be in the mortgage business to be on the same page, to make sure you do the right thing at the right time. And if I hadn't addressed this problem, we could have had, or issue I should say, we could have had a severe problem down the road. So I tell all of you on the phone and listening in and to our other team, if you're working consulting with anyone, is to make sure the quality control compliance team is on the same page with the operations and the lending team to ensure you avoid some burdensome litigation or repurchases or make whole agreements in the future. We want to make money in this business and we don't want to be caught holding the bag. So I advise each and every one of you to take heed to this message because I experienced it firsthand and I'm so glad I did this early on in my role as management of a new company. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for the update, Mark. Appreciate it very much. This is the end of this week's weekly mortgage update. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. Be sure to share this podcast with others. We appreciate you. Adam DeSanctis, thank you. Les Parker, Matt Graham, thank you. David Kittle, Alice Elvey, Alan Pollack, Bill Corbett, and Mark Helm, thank you all for making this podcast possible. Also, a special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI, Candid, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI, Modix, and Knowledge Coop. Check them all out on our Lickin' & Lending website. Good to hear from you. We love hearing from you. Give us your ideas on what you'd like us to cover and how we could do and serve you better via this podcast. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending. Our passion is to bring you the latest insights, trends, and updates from the world of mortgages. So on this show, if you're a seasoned industry veteran or just getting started, it's your go-to source for all things mortgage. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on LinkedIn and Twitter at David Lickin, on Facebook at David.Lickin, and on Instagram at DLickin. Take care, and we'll see you next time on Lickin' on Lending.